It's the Nahum Segal Network. We call this segment By the Book, an amazing opportunity to speak with some great authors and people responsible for some wonderful books geared to our community, courtesy of our friends at Koren Publications. Check out korenpub.com, korenpub.com, for information for the latest and greatest that they have released, both under the Koren label and under the Magid Books label. And today we have an opportunity to speak with Rabbi Aviad Tabori. Rabbi Aviad Tabori has taught at several yeshivot and seminaries in Israel, including Orot, Midrash at Lindenbaum, Midrash at Arova, also served as Rav Shaliach for Bnei Akiva in the United Kingdom, and was the founding rabbi of Kehilat Alei Tzion in London. Rabbi Aviad Tabori has been Rosh Beit Midrash at Camp Stone, Rav on Machal, TVI, Moshava Indian Orchard, and Chinuch Director of Machach. Basically, half the people in our audience probably know him at this point. He has smicha from the Israeli Rabbanut and holds a BA from Herzog College in Israel and serves as a reservist in the IDF Tank Corps. Rabbi Aviad Tabori, welcome to the Nahum Segal Network.
Thank you very much.
I'm only half joking when I say half this audience knows you, because of all these associations you have in the religious Zionist community here in the United States, I'm sure there are many people listening right now who know exactly who you are.
Yeah, I would hope so. I'm actually currently teaching in the Yeshivat Eretz Tzvi in Yerushalayim for the past 10 years, and many of our alumni are spread out around America. So I hope some of them are listening to us now.
Bezrat Hashem. The Weekly Mitzvah is a book by Rabbi Binyamin Tabori. You put it together. This is your father's work on the Weekly Parsha, correct?
Correct, yes. This is a part of a series of shiurim that my father gave in Yeshivat Har Etzion, where he's been teaching for the past 35 years. And these shiurim became, at some point, written shiurim on the VBM, Virtual Bet Midrash of Yeshivat Har Etzion. And we decided a few months ago to gather these writings and to put them out in the format of a book.
What's interesting about this, and we had the pleasure in our home to really delve into this past Shabbat once the book was received, is that one would suspect, especially with the way that the book is laid out by Parsha, which is a great format, one that's been duplicated many times in our history, one would think that this deals with a weekly mitzvah that's actually part of the Minyan HaMitzvot, that's actually part of the 613 mitzvot as they're laid out by some of the great rabbis of past generations. I was amazed and maybe, I don't want to say pleasantly surprised, but it was refreshing that every one of our parshiot, even if we don't have mitzvot in them, even if there's nothing from the Minyan HaMitzvot and the counting of the mitzvot in the parsha itself, every one of them, this book makes us realize, every parsha is connected to at least one, if not more, major mitzvot.
Correct. I think that's very unique about it's one of the things that's very unique about this book, that it's not necessarily, as you said, mitzvot that we always are familiar with, that we would open the parsha and assume that we're going to talk about a well-known mitzvah. Sometimes it's an issue that comes up only in Rishonim or a halachic custom that's mentioned elsewhere that's related somehow to the parsha, especially in Sefer Bereishit, of course, where it's pretty hard sometimes to actually find mitzvot. My father was able to really pick up from certain midrashim or from quotes of Rishonim certain mitzvot and talk about them.
Yeah. So in Bereishis, of course, Pru Revu, which is in the minyan in the mitzvah count and the listing of the mitzvot, is the one that he concentrates on. But really, from somewhat of a different angle, because he's bringing it to us from a halachic standpoint, which is often we don't associate mitzvot always with learning the halachot about it, but more sometimes when it comes to the parsha, understanding the context of how that specific mitzvah deals, in this case, in Bereishis, with the story of Bereishis. But he approaches it from a very halachic standpoint.
That's correct. I think it's more than that. I think that if you read my father's book and you go through the mitzvot, you will notice that you're starting to get a sense of understanding how and when a mitzvah is considered, is counted as a mitzvah. What makes a mitzvah into a mitzvah, not into a custom or into a an idea or a principle even? My father deals a lot in this book with the distinction between mitzvah d'oraita, d'rabbanan, what is a custom, what's, and what is just a principle or a value even. And I think that when one reads chapter after chapter, we start understanding that the Rishonim themselves argued many times if a matter should be counted as one mitzvah or two mitzvot. You know, in the book, for example, my father mentions as an afterthought, he mentions kibud avim,
right,
should be one or two mitzvot, because a father and a mother are two different identities that are included in this mitzvah. And many mitzvot and many of the topics that are mentioned here, you will notice the arguments amongst Rishonim and amongst Achronim, who really try to find some kind of logic. When we count a mitzvah as one of 613, when is a mitzvah just a principle and an important value, and when is it actually an obligation to fulfill?
Yeah, and for those
of us
who are, you know, wondering what the differences are, or maybe are wondering what the practical differences are, it is such a vast difference, and often we don't know this. Often, especially in today's society, in today's community, it seems that we often confuse custom and mitzvot and everything in between. And it is so important to realize what is a mitzvah, what is a direct commandment from God, and what is a mitzvah drabbanan, what came from the rabbis, and what belongs in that category of mitzvah, as opposed to what you just said, principle, custom, etc., etc. A lot of these times it gets blended together, and we don't realize that they have to be completely separated.
100%. I totally agree, and I believe that in today's world of education, in yeshivot, I believe that I learned this from my father. When I, growing up and learning with my father, how important it is to really learn the source of a mitzvah, to understand what level it's on, where it's coming from, and what level does it obligate us? Is it a mitzvah that applies to us today? Is it the deraita, the rabbanan, etc.? I would say that was almost my father's hobby. You know, learning books like Minchat Chinuch and other achronim, famous achronim, who love to play, as if to say, with these matters and to really question the source of all these of the mitzvot that we have.
Rabbi Aviad Tabori is with us. Rabbi Binyamin Tabori's book is called The Weekly Mitzvah, a Magid release. You can check it out on the Koren Publications website. It is remarkable. By the way, just as another point I must make, one of my kids made this point to me as we were going through this on Shabbat. In Parshas Toldos, a blind person's duty to perform or fulfill mitzvot, right? And of course, our tradition tells us that Yitzchak Avinu, Isaac, our great great grandfather, had trouble seeing, and that's a midrash that many people know from their young age. These are discussions. These are discussions that we've had as we study Mishnah and Gemara so often, but we never ever. And one of my kids pointed out, we never think of those in history, especially great people in history, who had this challenge. Now with Yitzchak, of course, you know, there's a question, observance of mitzvot or not in that era, I understand. But very often we never think of people in unique situations who had to encounter this as they went ahead and tried to observe mitzvot.
Yes, I think you're right. I think that it's important to bring up these questions. And to show that in the Talmud itself, there were famous Rabbi Yosef and other famous sages that were blind and actually had to have this question in front of them. It was a practical question. And I want to mention that some parts of the book are more practical, some less. You mentioned one article that's really a practical question about a blind man
in
mitzvot. And there are a few other examples. I want to bring to your attention a very interesting one that my father mentioned in Sefer Bereishit regarding, is it permissible to learn Torah while driving?
I knew it. I'm on that page. I knew you were going to bring this up. I knew it. It is so brilliant. That's Parshat Vayigash.
Correct. Correct. And what's interesting is because, as I said before, a lot of this book was based on shiurim that were given on the virtual Beit Midrash. Many of them are you know, you can download on download today on your MP3, and many people today drive to work listening to shiurim. I'm proud to say that my father's shiurim are quite well known. People download all the time, and yet in this book, my father really questioned whether it's permissible to listen to such shiurim due to the dangers involved while someone is driving. And the source of this discussion, that's what's really interesting. The source of the discussion really comes from Yosef warning his brothers when they go back to Eretz Yisrael from Mitzrayim to be aware of the dangers of their journey back. And my father, like, is able to skip a few hundreds of years, thousands of years, into our times, and to relate to the situation of modern, you know, driving, and to ask ourselves, really, would this apply in our times? So even though I would say most of the book is not as, you know, practical relevant as I just mentioned now, but there are some cases where we can learn from the Chumash almost directly to our days.
I've heard what you said just now about this issue, but is that what it's about? Is it about the intensity of the Torah study, and that intensity, in fact, might be a distraction to the driver? Is that what it comes down to?
Partially, yes. That's part of the issue. Correct.
Because I was wondering if there was another part of it where when one is driving, obviously, their full attention cannot be on what they're listening. That's humanly impossible. They're in the middle of a different function. They're multitasking, as we like to say today. And I was wondering if that was, I don't know, either irreverent or not giving the proper attention to the Torah. Can one go ahead and just have Torah going on in the background as if we would, lahavdil, have music or an instrumental going on in the background as we do our work?
Interesting point, but I'm not answering for my father right now. But I would probably just say, you know, if that would be the case, better that than any other music or any other radio, maybe except yours, of course. That would be in the background. So I guess having Torah in the background is, you know, I'm not sure how bad idea that would be.
Yeah, I got you. Believe me, I got you. On Parshat Vayechi, talk about Avelot. I'm trying to bring to the audience a perspective here. Even Yisro, which we know has a lot of different things you could address, right? Yisro has a lot of things you could have included when it comes to mitzvot, as we know. Kibud Av V'Em is the one that was chosen here, and that whole discussion is fascinating. So everybody has an opportunity to explore. And you said that a lot of things don't apply, and the driving example you gave is one that would directly apply today. I don't know. I found a very modern touch to every one of these presentations with each parsha. You know what I'm saying? Even if it's something that, you know, would relate more to hundreds or even thousands of years ago, I found a very modern approach and something that really brought it into the 21st century for me.
Right. I think it's also important to notice how many of the articles begin with the Chumash into the Gemara, into the Rishonim, but they almost always end with quoting modern achronim from the 19th century, from the 20th century achronim, poskim, rabbanim that really deal with questions that come up in our generation. So you're right to say that at the bottom, you know, almost every article ends with a practical idea, with a relevant idea. And I want to say a bit more than that. Many of the rabbis that are mentioned, as I said, at the end of the articles, many of the 20th century rabbis are actually rabbanim that my father personally knew. Right. In his endeavors over the years, many of the rabbanim that are mentioned there are people that my father spoke to and met with, and I think that's also very very special side of my father that comes up in this book, the personal touch of meeting gedolim, you know, talking to gedolim, hearing what they have to say. My father, the past 40, 50 years, has been literally around the world teaching Torah, and every community that he went to, he was always close with the Rabbanim and the Gedolim of every community. And I think you can feel that within the book. You get that feeling of the Torah that really continues from generation to generation and touches the people that actually bring that Torah alive.
Oh, no question about it. I can attest to that just having read it. When did his relationship with Yeshivat HaRetzion begin?
My father started teaching there in 1979. Wow. And if you'll allow me, I'll just tell you a very interesting story how
sure.
he became a rabbi in Shad HaRitzion, how he started to teach there. My father and Rav Lichtenstein go back many, many years. The Rosh Yeshiva Lichtenstein, who just passed away
right.
A few months ago, they go back years and years ago. And Rav Lichtenstein also taught my father at YU in the Kollel many years ago. And as it happened to be, in 1978, my parents were living in Toronto. My father came on a tiul to Eretz Yisrael, and he was taking my cousins on a tiul to Hebron. And on the way to Hebron, he pointed out to my cousins that, there's a big Rosh Yeshiva, a big Talmid Chacham of Aaron Lichtenstein in Yeshivat Har Etzion. Let's go visit him and say hello. And they being kids, said, that doesn't interest us. So my father told them, you come with me now to the yeshiva, and I will introduce to you a gadol who probably knows more baseball than both of you together. And they couldn't believe that, and they said, this is something that we have to see. So they went into the yeshiva, and my father turned to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, and he said, Rebbe, my nephews here have a shaila. And they asked some question about baseball regarding some game in the 50s. And Rav Aaron looked at them and said, oh, of course. And he started speaking about that game. He started mentioning all the moves and the plays in that game. And then he turned to my father and said, oh, Rav Binyamin, how about teaching here in English next year? So that's how my father became a Rabbi Gush. So we always say thanks to baseball, my father became a Rebbe in Gush.
You could say that again. That's an unusual tale. That's pretty remarkable, I must say.
Yeah.
All because of a visit like that. We're speaking to Rabbi Aviad Taburi here, and the book, The Weekly Mitzvah, written by, well, he compiled it, but of course the shiurim by his father, Rabbi Binyamin Taburi. Did you have a lot of different shiurim on each parsha, or different themes on each parsha that you have to choose from to decide what goes
as the
headline, so to speak, from each parsha?
Yes, because my father started this many years ago as a chug in the yeshiva. My father really, for years, taught a gemara shiur, a high-level gemara shiur for years. And he did these kind of shiurim were given as almost like what we call shashuei Torah, in the form of a chug, of an afternoon class that he used to give to a group of guys in the yeshiva. He would deliver these classes. And after many years, different topics, different mitzvot came up, and we have a whole pile of them. Who knows? Maybe one day we'll put out another volume. But my father himself had to choose which ones to put in the book or not. And as I said, there are a few other mitzvot that we have in each parasha.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, and I'm sure a second volume and maybe even more are certainly going to be possible. There's another book we want to speak to Rabbi Aviad Taburi about. It's called To Stand and Serve on Being a Kohen. Essays in Memory of Mark Weinberg, a Magid Books release. You can check it out at Koren Publications, korenpub.com, korenpub.com. Tell us about your involvement with the release of this book, To Stand and Serve on Being a Kohen.
Well, this book really has a very personal side to myself and my family. Mark Weinberg was my late brother-in-law, my wife's brother, who passed away in 2010. Due to terrible illness, and he was a young man of 35 years old with a great promising future in the Jewish community. At a very young age, he showed amazing skills of leadership in his community. He was very close to Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. We used to call him the Talmid Muvak of Rabbi Jonathan Sacks in London.
Wow.
And at an early age, as I mentioned, he was involved in the community in London. He was one of the people that built LSJS, if you are aware, in London,
yep.
London School of Jewish Studies, which today gives Shiurei Torah to hundreds of British Jews all around London. And he passed away very young age. He himself was a Kohen, and we thought that it was the right thing to put out a book in his memory talking about Kehuna, about what it means to be a Kohen, not only in the times of Beit Mikdash, but also what would it mean to us today in our generation? What can we learn from the model of the Kohen in the Jewish community when it comes to leadership? It's meaning to us today I would say that is one of the main themes of the book, and we dedicated it to his memory.
This might sound like a naive question, but sometimes important answers come from answering questions like that. The role of the Kohen seems to be so much more limited, quite obviously, than what it was in the earlier times in Jewish history. Maybe a very small percentage, a tiny percentage, a tiny drop of what a Kohen's responsibilities were and what their role was as compared to the times, for instance, of the Beit HaMikdash, etc. Is there still plenty to learn from modern-day kahuna with that in mind?
Yes, okay. I think the answer would really be divided into two different levels. One level would be that there's certain halachot that apply till today to Kohanim and to the community in which Kohanim live. And if we talk about Yichus of Kohanim, if we talk about Tumah of Kohanim, if we talk about Birkat Kohanim, these are topics that, of course, are relevant and important to us today and obviously to Kohanim. That's why I would advise every Kohen to go through this book, because he'll be able to learn many of the topics that are relevant today to Kohanim. But on another level, I would argue that there is a lot to learn from leadership and attributes that we can learn from the Tanakh and from the Talmud regarding who a Kohen, what a Kohen is, what his responsibilities are, what his place in the community is, and how can we today somehow copy those characteristics of a Kohen today and apply them in the Jewish community. I would even argue that today many of our the role models of Rabbanim today are probably taken a lot from what the Kohen used to be. The Kohen in Tanakh's time, you know, in the Tanakh, it tells us that the Kohen was the figure who taught Torah to the community. So surely, when we read in Chazal, when we read in Tanakh about the Kohen, there's a lot to learn today and a lot to take from there today and apply it in our communities today when we talk about leadership.
Yeah, there's no question that they are fulfilling a role. The rabbis of today are fulfilling a role that the Kohen certainly filled for many generations. To Stand and Serve on Being a Kohen, it's Essays in Memory of Mark Weinberg. It's a Magid Books release. Rabbi Aviad Tabori is with us as we discuss this book. Is there a precedent? I'm sure there is. I just wouldn't know it. For example, my grandfather wrote the Torat Leviim because we're Leviim, and he wanted everyone to know, you know, what a Levi must do once the Beit HaMikdash is back. Is there a guide historically for Kohanim aside from the Rambam, is there a guide historically for Kohanim which, you know, was sort of like a handbook for the Kohen's role?
I'm not familiar with such a book. I wouldn't be surprised if there is such a book. And our book somehow fulfills that idea. It's not a book that tells you, you know, it's not a book that will mention page after page what exactly one should do. For example, even the chapter about Birkat Kohanim,
right,
talks about the halachic ideas behind Birkat Kohanim. For example, it compares the Birkat Kohanim that we do today and questions compared it to the Birkat Kohanim of the Beit HaMikdash, the times of the Avoda and the Beit HaMikdash, and questioned whether or not it is part of Tefillah or part of the Avoda and Beit HaMikdash. So it's not necessarily telling you, you know, a Kohen must put his feet together when he makes Birkat Kohanim and you must look at the Kohen's hand, but rather really tries in great depth, I believe, to understand the idea of Birkat Kohanim, what's behind it. There are other cases like this in the book where we talk about principles of the kahuna and try to understand what's behind them rather than being just a guidebook of telling you what a Kohen should or not be doing.
And could you tell us in the book, there's somebody in the book who addresses the issue of the first Kohen. You know, when we grew up, we were told from a young age who the first Kohen was. But that is not necessarily where Kohuna began, correct?
That is correct. But interestingly enough, we do find, already in Sefer Bereishit, we already find the concept of Kohen. And this article, the author, Rafi Zarim, who was actually a personal close friend to my brother, Mark, He questioned what can we learn from the mention of the Quran in such an early stage of the Tanakh, when even before we have a Bet Mikdash, even before Am Yisrael is really what we know it becomes to, we see that this idea of Kohen is not necessarily a new idea from the Bet Mikdash, but rather from before that. Mm. Bichlal, I think, you know, we are told that, Am Yisrael are told that we have to become a Murchat Kohanim B'Goy Kadosh, a kingdom of a priest. And obviously, it doesn't mean that we're all supposed to be Kohanim, but rather it means that the idea of Kehuna has relevance to each and every one of us, and there are ideas of the Kehuna that are meaningful to every Jew in Am Yisrael.
Yeah, it's such a great message. By the way, Rabbi Sachs's words about your brother-in-law in this book are amazing, but I'm sure you know that.
Yes. Look, you know, when I spoke about this book a few months ago when we launched it in London, so I actually spoke about the book. I said, this kind of book, where would you put in the library? Under which section in the library? Would it be in the section of halakha?
Right.
Would it be in the section of philosophy, Jewish philosophy, machshava? Where would you put it exactly? And I, at the end, I made an argument that I would put in biographies, even though the book is not a real biography
right.
of my brother-in-law, but it really mentions the idea of leadership of what Kehuna is all about, and that's really what my brother-in-law was all about. He was about leadership in the Jewish community, teaching Torah to the community, and that way, this book is really, in some kind of strange way, a biography of my late brother-in-law.
Well, from what I read, he seems to have been a remarkable person. I pray that his family is able to continue with strength at this point, because he does seem like he was just a remarkable person. Rabbi Aviad Tabori, he is responsible for compiling the work of his father, Rabbi Binyamin Tabori, in a book called The Weekly Mitzvah. I am highly recommending it. We had an amazing time with it this past Shabbat at home, and I'm sure everybody out there will enjoy it at their own Shabbat table. To Stand and Serve, he's responsible for as well. To Stand and Serve on Being a Kohen, Essays in Memory of Mark Weinberg, both of these books, Magid book releases from Koren Publishers. Rabbi Tabori, an honor to spend this time with you. Kol HaKavod, two amazing works. I am sure you're very proud.
Thank you very much. I just want to mention at the end that the books were put out, you know, with a lot of help from friends, and I can't mention all the different people that were involved in helping us put these books together, but many, many good people, students of my father, friends of my parents, who helped us bring the book together, as well as the book To Stand and Serve, other editors and people that put a lot of effort into making this book happen. So I really want to thank all of them.
Duly noted. Many of them mentioned, of course, in the books themselves, and a very good point. There are a lot of good people out there who want to make sure that everyone's inspired by books like these. Rabbi Tabori, Kol HaKavod, thanks so much for joining us. A pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you very much.
Rabbi Aviad Tabori here at the Nachum Segal Network. We are concluding another amazing edition of By the Book here with our friends at Koren Publishers. You can go to korenpub.com, korenpub.com, korenpub.com. They always have an incredible list of brand new material for our community. And in this case, a remarkable double jolt of great publications with both The Weekly Mitzvah by Rabbi Binyamin Tabori and To Stand and Serve on Being a Kohen, compiled for Rabbi Aviad Tabori. By the Book, brought to you by the friends at Koren Publishers. You are listening to the Nachum Segal Network.